This evening, the pen and paper, because it's a question and answers, your questions, and so we'll write them all down. For those who are too shy to ask questions straight, they can. So we send a paper and a pen around, and then you just ask, you write your questions, meanwhile, if anyone has a live question, raise your hand. That is also, I don't need that. I just need pen and paper. So if anyone has a question, then raise your hand and you can ask your question. And otherwise, we'll wait. Can I have pen and paper? I don't want to have pen and paper. That's good. Is there any paper?
Yes.
Every year we have pen and paper. You don't know. We always do question answers. Yeah. So anyway, since there's no paper, someone asked a question. Go ahead.
While we're waiting for questions, could you just tell us a bit more about the glories of reading?
Can I tell you more about the glories of reading? We're speaking about the words of Krishna. We all just hand it around. Please write your questions, but not just thoughtless questions. Think for a moment. Write something real, something that has some meaning to you. If you ask me, some question that is just for the sake of asking a question, what's the point? Ask something that has meaning. That would be nice. So, reading, yes, we're speaking about reading the words of Krishna. Reading Bhagavad Gita, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, those are the words of Krishna. So naturally, every word of Krishna is very potent. It is said, even if you put the Bhagavad Gita in your house and you never read it at all, even then you get purified. What to speak if you actually read it? To regularly stay in touch with the words of Krishna is a great blessing, and that is what is needed. Okay. Many pens, many papers, many questions. Who has already a question written down? Okay, I'll give it to you. Yes.
I just want to ask that why we are born in this world.
Why are we born in this world? At first we come into this world because we want to be independent from Krishna. We don't want to be servant, we want to be master. So this is the world where those jivas, those living entities, who have a desire to lord it over the material nature, who want to be lord and master, can appear. So this is what's happening. Everyone is trying to be master. No one wants to be servant. And this we experience. Then we get caught up in a network of karma, of action and reaction, and that will force us to take birth again and again. And if we do sinful actions, we get a bad birth. If we do pious actions, we get a good birth. Like that.
Okay, so like our first birth in this world was because of we wanted to be masters. So
yes. 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 Yeah, and then it went on and on and on and on for a long time. And then one who is again getting into the mood of servant, real servant. Yes, everyone has to be servant. You can't escape it. At work, you have to say yes, boss. Boss, very nice, boss. Thank you so much, boss. You have to serve whether you want it or not. But that is not real servant. To be servant fully, that is a different thing. You know, there was a man in the company where he worked. He was on the lowest level. He was what you call in India a peon, or a gopher, someone who you send to get the coffee, or you call him and take this paper to office number so and so, Jones. Yeah, there's different names for these kind of people in India and outside of India. So anyway, his name was Jones. Jones. So everyone all day, Jones, 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 come here. You stupid Jones. Jones, you have any brain? Jones, you're useless. Jones. That was Jones. And then at night, Jones would come back and he'd sit in a chair and he had a dog. And you know the name of the dog? What's the name of the dog? That's right, Jones. So then he would say, come here, Jones, you stupid dog. Sit up. Right? And Jones would sit up, and then with his foot, he would push over the dog, and the dog would fall. And he'd say, you're useless, Jones. And then again he would say, sit up. Right? So everyone wants to be master in this world. It is very deep.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Yeah, like last time when we went to the retreat of Hare Krishna Valley, I remember. He said that like sometimes even people don't know like what they want actually. Like they are so much into the like pleasures of this world, and they are so much confused in the world that they don't understand like what actually they want.
Sure.
Like they go for one thing. They don't find that pleasure, you know. Yeah. For some time you get, and then you can't.
Yeah.
You know, no nothing can give you pleasure for like.
Sure.
You know, it's like that. You know. It was a talking with a phone in your hand, you know.
So, yeah, my question was like, Prabhupada said that the name of Lord Krishna that you chant, you get a like spiritual happiness with that name.
Yeah.
But my question is like, is it possible like for me like when I chant the name, you know, for some time, I just get the happiness, and then after some time, it's like the same thing that you know the worldly thing that gives you happiness for some time.
Yeah.
And then after some time, then you keep on like it's,
sure.
It feels like a boring. Why is
yeah,
it so?
Yeah, you know, like I mean, actually, there's a cartoon, right? And you see these people on the airport, and they're calling out, "Apple, apple, apple." And they're all jumping around, you know, and there's some Hare Krishna standing next to it and saying, it's a cult. Yeah. It's a cult. It's the apple people. Yeah. It's a cult. So, people are chanting apple, 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 right? Apple computer. Fine, you know, and some pleasure is there, but then after a while, yeah, the pleasure is gone, and then you look for a new pleasure. So is it the same with spiritual life? Some people who take it materially, they seem to think like that. They come, they chant for some time, they go away. Right? Some do. But those who at the same time are hearing from devotees, they begin to see that there is actually more to it than one thinks at first sight. Or those who have some sukriti from before, they have already done some service before, unknowingly, or from last life, or something in this life. They didn't know, but somehow or other they did something. They have a special drive. They can go longer. Or those who have suffered in the material world, they also, Chaturvidha Vajante Mam, it is said four types of people are coming to me, Krishna says. Those who have suffered material distress, those who are looking for improving material conditions, those who those who are looking for spiritual knowledge, and I forgot what it is.
Inquisitive,
thank you. And those who are curious, out of curiosity, well. So these are the four type of people that come. But when they are in the association of devotees, then their initial interest changes. And they see, actually, it is much deeper than I thought. Actually, there's much more to it. Yeah. So in that way, yes, in the beginning we can come superficially, but then after some time, we can go deeper. This is how it works.
Okay, and one last
question. One last.
Yeah, like, it's very difficult for me to decide. Like, I've been vegetarian for last, like, 2 or 3 years. But what if, like, I get a job in McDonald's, the opportunity in McDonald's and Ajax, where I'm supposed to deal with the non-veg? So...
Yeah, you will go to hell together with Ronald McDonald. Yeah. I can just say, you won't be alone. If that makes you feel better. But personally, I would decline the offer. If I get a job offer in McDonald's, I'd say, thank you so much, very kind of you to offer, but no thank you. A fine job. So yes, there are certain jobs that are untouchable, and like, one should not take such occupations. You know, there is a story about a sage. He saw different personalities. He saw a prince, and he said, live, don't die. He saw a brahmachari. He said, you die now. Don't live, die, said to the brahmachari. To the self-realized sage, he said, live or die. To the butcher, he said, don't live, don't die. So why to the prince, live and don't die, it's obvious. He had everything, but at the end of life, he'll get reactions, he'll lose it all. To the brahmachari, yes, don't, just you die, because now you are in the best position. Later you may not be. Better you die now. So of course we wish all the brahmacharis. So. And then, who else did I have? Self-realized sage. Doesn't matter whether he dies or lives, the same. But the bhujja, better he doesn't live and better he doesn't die. Because whatever he does in his life now is the cause of great suffering. And whatever he does, and whatever he gets in the next life will be bad. So to a butcher, don't live, don't die. Any written questions? Is there anyone who can write actually in this book?
One question, Maharaj.
That's your question.
Not a written one.
Okay, well, I got a written one here, so you're next. I got some more written, and then you're coming next. Okay, Hari Bol Maharaj, why is it important to glorify the Lord? Because the Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. That's why. And He's engaged in pleasure activities. That's what it is. And we think that this dry world is giving us pleasure. But the truth of the matter is that here it doesn't work. As the old song from the West goes, I can't get no satisfaction I can't get no satisfaction. You may have heard the song even in India. And if you haven't heard it, I think you know the song anyway. Now, because how to get satisfaction is very difficult. Yeah, I think now the papers start coming in huge quantities. And here's someone who is cheating by writing 3 questions in one. That is cheating. How is the soul born? The soul is never born. Ajayate mriyate vakadachin, Bhagavad Gita says, not born, neither dies. Can chanting help a smoking addict leave smoking? It depends, right? How you chant, right? But why do you worry about that, right? Chanting is meant to give you great happiness, and then one day you'll realize, why am I doing this filthy thing of puffing away at some stupid cigarette, and it costs so much money. So it's by desire that we'll give it up. So when our desire changes, then we'll give it up. So don't worry, chant. It's the higher taste, then smoking will disappear. Okay, questions. window.
I recovered enough.
Now I won't read it anymore.
Just wanted to ask, how you came in touch with ISKCON? How and when, and what's your story? How you became a devotee?
That takes 3 hours to teach. Seriously, that's a whole seminar. It's like a whole seminar.
In short.
3 to 4 hours. In short, basically, I saw the Hare Krishnas in my country in the street. I start the story in the middle and not at the beginning now. But I saw the Hare Krishnas in the street selling books. And I just could see, in those days, they would wear false hair. Yeah? Wigs, yeah? Because they were shaved up and then they had wigs on top. So I could see immediately that hair is not real. Just like him, you know? Everybody can see it, right? But it is false. Yeah. Nobody has hair like that. So I could see it straight away. They must be bald, huh? So as they're standing there with their books in the street, I think, yeah, they're trying to convert to me, you know. So I had been in India and I had learned how to deal with some beggars in the street, you know. don't make eye contact, cold face. So they never stopped me, they never sold me a book. So I got rid of the Hare Krishnas. And as a result, I got a girlfriend. And the girlfriend had a dog, and the dog's name was Krishna. Then at night I was walking with that dog, and the dog, you know, the dog wouldn't come back. So every night I would be calling out, Krishna, very loud. And in this way I did Harinam Sankirtan. That's a short story.
Is that real?
Yeah, that's real. I couldn't make it up. Real life is more far out than anything you could think of. Yeah, the whole story is longer, a lot longer. Some other time. We do special seminar if you want. Okay.
Yeah, just adding to Prabhuji's question that we've come here because of envy towards Krishna.
Who says that? He didn't say that, nor did I say that.
Adding to his question, so okay. We've understood that we're here because we're envious of Krishna, and that's why we've been sent to this material.
No. Wrong.
Please correct me.
Yes. How can you be envious in the spiritual world?
Yes.
No, you cannot be envious. In the spiritual world is an ocean of transcendental love. It is an ocean of exchange between Krishna and his devotees. You think that in the middle of all that, you know, loving Krishna, suddenly one day Dracula appears and you become envious? How is it possible?
Maybe I misused my independence, but why did I misuse it in the first place?
Well, it is like this. It is not, you're jumping to another question, but the point is this. It is said in English, curiosity kills the cat. You heard that saying. It's curiosity. That the living being is part and parcel of Krishna. The same qualities of Krishna are present in the jiva, in the living being, but in minute quantity, like the drop of the ocean in the ocean. So, therefore, because in Krishna there is independence, within the living being there's also independence. So upon serving Krishna, upon eternity, one time one might come across the possibility, actually, I could also, instead of serving, I could also be the enjoyer. I could be. As soon as one ponders the question, one is in what is called a tatastha state. A marginal state. Tatastha means in between, marginal. Neither here nor there. One is then not absorbed in loving service to Krishna, and one is also not fallen. One is not envious. One is simply curious about the possibility. Then, Okay. Okay, make space for the ladies. The ladies are somehow or other in the kitchen. I don't know what to think of them. Anyway, back to the original question. So you got the question. The answer is we are in the tattastha. We're in the marginal state. Please sit down because you're distracting me. I'm going to beat you. And for the third time, I have to start the answer. All right. Okay. So sit still. What else? I am not lost, but my audience is lost. And that is the problem. So I have to start again. Alright, so we're in the spiritual world. We have the same qualities of Krishna, independence. Then upon eternity comes the possibility I could be the enjoyer instead of the servant. And as soon as we start meditating on that question, we are not absorbed in serving Krishna. Therefore, it is a tattastha state. We're also not actually gone down to enjoying the material energy, we're only pondering the question. Therefore, we're in the marginal position. From that position, we can say, no, and return to service. Or we can say, like, well, maybe it would be interesting. And then we begin our sojourn in the material world. And envy comes in a little later then. That comes in then when we go down to the material world. Then we are there to be Lord and Master. And then we are in competition with Krishna.
Two small questions to tag on to that, just for further clarification. So when I was in the spiritual world, in my real identity, I was also full of knowledge, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were.
And still I decided to.
Still you did. Because of your minute, you have all, we are infinitesimal living beings, and the illusory energy is very great because it is the reflection of Krishna's spiritual energy. Therefore, the material energy is so attractive because it gets its attraction from Krishna. Even it's a reflection of Krishna's spiritual energy, it's so attractive. Because the reflection of that. So therefore, it's a very attractive thing. So since we are so small and infinitesimal, and we don't have unlimited knowledge. In the spiritual world, the living being is Satsitanand. He is situated in eternity. He is situated in knowledge. And he's situated in happiness. Now, the knowledge that he has is not unlimited, but he knows what he needs to know. Yeah. Krishna's qualities, Krishna's opulences are unlimited. Even Krishna himself doesn't know the limit of Krishna. So one can never know Krishna in full. Yeah. Even Krishna, it said Krishna's knowledge is always in competition with his qualities. When Krishna finds out that there was a quality that he wasn't aware of, his knowledge increases. And then as his knowledge has caught up, he finds another quality. And again his knowledge, and this is an eternal discovery because his qualities are unlimited. So we are only knowing that which we need to know to express our love. Yeah, it is here we're always feeling blocked, you know, in every way. We never have enough money, we never have enough intelligence, we never have enough of anything, we never have enough knowledge. Here you always get less than you need, that we all experience, and therefore we are all experiencing some frustration.
Maharaj, the last question to tag on to that. So we begin our journey somewhere in the material world, in the 8.4 million species. So
yeah.
what is the factor that determines where we begin? Because
we begin in the position of Lord Brahma. Now, I know if you start to get mathematical, and you wonder how is that possible, but it goes over a longer period of time, and there are unlimited universes. So it is said that every living being begins in the position of Brahma and then goes down. There are two types of Brahmas, those that go down and those that go up. And mathematically, yes, it's a little mind-blowing to my mathematical brain also. I share that with you. But I accept it anyway.
What's the guarantee that once we go back to the spiritual world, we won't fall back again?
Because we will remember. And therefore, as soon as we again, as that thought comes up, we go, no. No, thank you. No, is there no thank you? Very good. No. Very good. Nice. Nice offer. I must decline.
How can we remember if we even can't remember our previous birth?
Now, because now we are covered. But when we are liberated in the spiritual plane, then we can remember. We can remember anything. No more forgetfulness. Forgetfulness is here. What is my name?
Kadambakalamaswami.
That is material world. You can't even remember your own name. What day is today? Today, what date?
Today.
Date, quick, date. Here we can't remember anything. In the spiritual world, we don't have that. That is material. Yes, gentlemen at the window.
How do you identify good from evil?
How do you, what, the tram was louder than you?
How do you identify good from evil? Because we are always influenced by what is good and what is evil.
Very difficult. Very difficult. You know, I mean, you sincerely want to help someone. And you decide that to donate some organs. You know, after you die, of course. Anyway, and then, you know, the day comes, we all have to go, and someone gets your liver, and they get a liver transplant, and then they will cheat someone in business, and you, even after your death, get the karma, because they used your liver to cheat. So it's so hard to do good. You think you're doing good, but it's so complicated to do good. So it's difficult to do good. It's also difficult to determine what is good and what is bad. Something looks extremely good, right? And then after a while you find out, well, it wasn't that good after all. How many marriages went that way? Or other things, you know, other things in this world. You look at things in this world, it looks good, but you don't know. I heard a story of a man who got a cell phone which exploded on him and killed him. Yeah? He must have really wanted this phone, you know. He really wanted the phone, right? And then, hello, yeah, and then maybe came back in this world. And cries at the memories. It's all right. It usually doesn't happen, only very rarely. Now, you see my point. So it's very difficult to determine what is right and what is wrong. Therefore, mundane ethics, right, is always falling short. Yeah? It is falling short. In general, we have an idea, it's good to give to the poor. Right? A lot of people would agree, you know. Is it good to give to the poor, all in favor? You know, a lot of hands would go up. But not necessarily so, because they may misuse it. Right? So, but whatever Krishna says, that's guaranteed. That's okay. You know, so if you take the Gita, then you're sure. Therefore, it's so nice if you live by the Gita, because it takes us off this whole mental platform, deciding, is it right, is it wrong? Very difficult question. Abortion. You see it in Delhi, Delhi railway station, you see everywhere nearby on the wall, abortion and a telephone number. Not only in Delhi, but I've seen many times on the wall, abortion and a telephone number. So it's going on. Right? It's going on. So is it a good thing or a bad thing? Tell me. No, honestly, tell me.
No, it depends.
Depends.
It depends. Really. Yeah. If you are in a position to give a good life to the child, then it is bad. If you are not in a position to give good life to that child, it's better not to bring it in this world. So it depends.
Okay, but how do you know what you can give the child?
Well, they are going by my current status.
But you cannot be sure, because maybe that child will get some blessing. Maybe the child is born in a very poor family by the side of the road, and maybe I'll drive past and say, oh, this poor child, I will pay for the education of the child. You don't know. So how can you know?
That's the precise question. How can we know?
So, Bhagavad Gita is clarifying it completely. We simply stick with that, no problem. No problem. Krishna takes the responsibility then. In scriptures, abortion is not sanctioned, by the way. Not even for such emergencies where you think the child won't have a good chance. No. Nay. So according to scripture, anyone who paints such things on the wall and telephone numbers is sharing in the karma. Whoever has the painter, the sign painter, is sharing in the karma. The person who uses the telephone and takes the call. Yes, the receptionist. Yes, can we help you? Shares in the karma. Everyone who's connected to it shares in that karma. So we can't recommend, I'm sorry to say, under no condition can we accept it. Simple. Takes us off the natural platform. But scripture makes it clear. So scripture is the only authority. How to understand scripture? Next question. Logical. By one who has realized the scripture. You can just like how to take a medical textbook. I used to live in Vrindavan in UP, right? And that was a long time ago when in the rural areas the medical facility was was sometimes worse than the disease. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about, right? I was in the Ramakrishna Mission one time, hospital, and doctors were fighting over me. It's malaria. It's typhoid. It's malaria. It's typhoid. So fine, I thought it was malaria. So you have to buy your own medicine. Yeah? So I was sending someone to buy the malaria medicine, and the typhoid doctor said, "You will die. You will die. I tell you, you will die." Thank you. I survived it, and I got out of that hospital somehow or other. I found it. So we used to have a book in our temple, which was called Where There Is No Doctor. A very good book, you know, very popular. Everyone was reading it, me too. And then he was reading it, and you see, yes, I have that. Yes, I have typhoid. Yes, I have that. Malaria also, yes. And I have whooping cough also. And every page you would read, you would think, yes, I have it. I have these symptoms. I'm serious. That was a super interesting book. You can find on the internet, Where There Is No Doctor. Big book. Very nice book. Anyway, so it doesn't really replace a doctor, I can tell you that. Better go to a good specialist and let him figure it out. In the same way, if you want to understand the Gita, you have to get it from a realized soul. Therefore, next to the Gita, must also be a guru, or guru parampara, different gurus on different levels, teachers, there must be teachers. Along, doctoring with the Gita, good luck. You may cut your leg and think it's a good idea. Yeah. Meaning of Hare in the Maha Mantra. Hare means, well, we begin with Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive. Hare means the service offered to the all-attractive. And Rama means the happiness, which is the result from that service. That was easy. And sometimes I feel it is cruel on the part of Krishna. Nature, that a soul has to go through 8.4 million species as a punishment. Please help me collect this thing. Yeah, I talked about it the other day. It's like everyone likes to think that he is good. It's like that, you know. Everyone thinks I'm basically good. Basically, I'm good. Everyone thinks I'm basically good. And okay, due to circumstances, I am forced to do these things. But actually, I am good. I'm a victim, really. No, serious. You know, I mean, I got into crime. If I really tell you how I got into crime, actually, yeah. I got into crime because, actually, you know, in my family. No, really, my mother. You know, she didn't even have the basics, you know what I mean, for survival. It was intolerable. And then, and one day I was in the bank and I forgot that I had my gun in my shopping bag. I was actually looking for a pen, you know? I thought it was a pen. I pulled out the gun and immediately they gave me all the money. I tell you. And then as I walked out of the bank with all this cash, I was thinking, maybe it's God's arrangement. And then I brought it home for mom. Actually, I'm just a victim. So everyone tends to think of himself that he's basically good. Basically good. I know. I did some bad things after that. Yeah. You know, I was in bad company, and if one thing comes another, but actually, you know, I didn't really want to do it. Actually, you know. And those few people that I killed, they deserved it anyway. You see, it's like somehow or other, everyone thinks himself as good, and therefore, yeah, what to do. But we have to understand that actually we are maybe not good. So the beginning is that we must take responsibility for our actions. First we take responsibility for our actions and say, actually, I am a rascal. Actually, if I'm really honest. You want to know some palmistry? Everyone likes some palmistry, you can see that.
Adam,
well, he's a good man. You know, if you look at the hand, you look at the little fingers, right? Okay, check out your little fingers. Yeah, look at them. Are they straight or are they bent? If they are straight, well, let's say if they're bent, if they're bent, right? If one is bent, you are a businessman. If two are bent, you are a cheater. if they're straight, then you're basically honest. Of course, you could still cheat, but less chance. So he has some business sense. It's all right. Yeah, well... borderline.
Still forming, still on the way. So.
Put some wooden sticks at my whatever, maybe. So it doesn't matter. Even if your fingers are as crooked as anything, if you chant Hare Krishna, even then you can become purified from those fingers. So that is our good fortune. Because we are not our fingers. So this is our good fortune. Anyway, so this punishment, right? We should take responsibility for not being so qualified. And therefore, it's, you know, the criminal is always saying, oh, why are they punishing me like this? Yeah, because you're a rascal. And, you know, you've done all these crimes. Yes, no, but it, you know, Your Honor, it was not really my fault. Yeah. Anyway, you've done it. Now you will be punished. And you will have to go through it some time so that you can think about it for some time. And get over this. So, when a human being becomes so degraded that he doesn't care for any other living being anymore, then he is no longer a human being. Then he's an animal. That's jungle. You see, you know, the nice cat, you know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then the monster is outside, you know, mouse killed, ripped. You see it sometimes. Or you see these birds, they look so nice, beautiful colored birds, and then you see them down. I saw one, kingfisher, with not only airlines, but also a bird, actually. And I saw this kingfisher come down from the branch, I say, wow, what a beautiful bird. Next moment, it swallowed a mouse. So it's a whole mouse. So whoa, he's not a vegetarian. So, if we are like that we are ready to swallow all living beings, yes, then the facility is given. Yes, yes, be it. Then go ahead, Krishna says. You want to taste blood? Yes, go ahead. In the year 2006, and that's 6 years ago, that was the last statistics I saw out of India, only 32% in India was still vegetarian. But the funny thing is that no one eats meat in India, no one. Everyone eats only non-veg. So that's interesting because it means that veg is the standard. Think about that. If you're eating non-veg, right, then veg is the standard. If you would say, today we're eating non-meat, then meat is the standard, right? Yeah? And veg would be the special thing. But if you say we're eating non-veg, it means veg is the standard and non-veg is the additional. Just see, everybody knows. But 32% only, 68% in 2006, and I think in the last 6 years, a few more percentage have been added. Because the trends are changing very fast. Yeah. So Prabhupada said, India will be the country where people will be the most exalted and the most degraded at the same time in Kali Yuga. Yeah, if you go in Delhi for an operation, you have to be careful because they may take out a few more organs than you go in. Appendix, yes. This is immediate operation. The kidney is also gone. Now everybody knows. This is all over the papers, all the time. Doctors get caught all the time. But what about the ones that don't get caught? And what about that appendix operation that you had? How many kidneys do you have? So what about such a doctor? What's he going to get? Well, you know, he took the oath of Hippocrates, you know, the oath to engage his occupation for the good of mankind as a doctor, and see what he did. He has to suffer a little bit. No, I'll never do it again. No, that's not good enough. No, you have to suffer for a time, for a while, to free you from this selfishness. Yes.
What about the life that kidney is saving on the other way?
The kidney saving? Yeah, that's okay. But still, you can't steal someone's kidney. Maybe I stole it to save people's lives. Yeah, to save my bank account. Come on. That's an argument of your lawyer. But the judge will not go for it. Convicted. Sorry. How can we practice compassion? Look at that. To its fallen souls. Instead of feeling compassion to the body or compassion for ourselves. Yes. Compassion for... Usually we feel compassion for ourselves. So we have to practice to give. To give for others. It takes some time, this compassion thing. So in the beginning in spiritual life, we don't do so much for others' welfare. We do it for ourselves. Huh? We have suffered in the material world, and we take up spiritual life, and we think about ourselves. And my spiritual life is a very, very nice spiritual life, and so on. It's our spiritual life. But gradually, we begin to do something for others. The more we begin to do for others, the more advancement we make. And the more we get a higher taste. In the beginning, in spiritual life, you may struggle. That I know, Swamiji, I know it is the best. But somehow or other, I have no taste. Yes. Now sacrifice. Now sacrifice for the well-being of others. There was a sage, and he lived in a cave in the mountain. 20 years. After 20 years, the sage said, I can't do it anymore. I'm going down the mountain. The sage came down the mountain. Then, as he was halfway down the mountain, he saw a man who was with a thread. He was pulling a thread over a copper rod. He said, what are you doing? He said, I'm cutting this rod. He said, with a thread? He said, well, eventually it will be cut. He said, wow, this man has so much patience. He went back up the mountain. And 10 more years, he got strength from that. And he went back up the mountain. After 30 years in the cave, he could really not tolerate it any longer. He came down the mountain. This time, he saw, at the edge of the village, he saw a dog. And this dog was dying, covered in flies, you know, like, you know, in India you can see such a thing, everyone is sick. So he's feeling like very, very sorry for this dog, actually. He felt some compassion. And he thought, okay, let me give this dog a little water. So he took with his lota, took some water, gave the dog some water. Then that dog changed its form and became a demigod and said, and now you have started your spiritual life. All these years you have only been concerned with your own spiritual advancement. And now finally you're doing something for the welfare of others. Now your spiritual life has begun. Now you can carry on. So it is like that. When we start to do things for the welfare of others, that's where it begins. That's where the real change comes. And otherwise, we are chanting and we are trying and still not changing very much. It's the welfare work for the benefit of others that will really change our heart. And real welfare work means not just you give them money, not just you give them some flood relief, some food relief, real welfare workings, you give them the best Harinam Sankirtan. That's welfare.
I feel I suffer from depression. Can we please talk about it and some solution?
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to be depressed about material life, but one should be very optimistic about spiritual life. So if we are depressed, we are one-sided. We are one-sided. Because in spiritual life, one is always optimistic because no one loses. In spiritual life, there are no losers. No one. Anyone who comes to the temple is getting benefit. There's no one. It's not some are always the lucky ones and I am always missing out. No. In spiritual life, no one misses out. Everyone makes advancement. Everyone gets blessing. For everyone, there's improvement. So when we are depressed, it means we're thinking about material life. And I agree with you, there are many reasons to get depressed about material life. I would be depressed also about material life. Is this all there is? Is this all there is, my friend? Is this all there is? Is this all there is? What's the point of this? That's material life. All reason to be depressed. So don't worry about it. It's totally normal. You're healthy. And all you have to do is take up some spiritual activity and the positive element will come into your life. Okay. Can you look miserable for a moment? Look miserable. See? Before. And now smile, please. Thank you very much. Well done. I knew there was an actor in you. Okay, anyone else? Question? No, you're just waving your hand. let me keep on reading, huh? Yes. How can we practice compassion? I already read this one. Sorry about that. Still bridge. How you came in touch? I did this. Okay, I came in touch. We are always surrounded by material energy. How do I utilize material energy in the service of Krishna? Yes. I saw a beautiful four-wheel drive and the number plate said, "For you, Krishna." Is it as simple as that? Or is it partially for Krishna and partially for us? So, yeah, the material energy is always dangerous. The first principle is that for our own private life, we don't need so much. We should keep life simple. Yeah. We should keep it simple. For service, yes, then we can accept so many things. For service, oh yes, I use all these material things. But for my own private life, only what is necessary. This is the example of the tortoise. The tortoise keeps its legs within the house and the shell.
Shell.
Keeps it in the shell, and then when it needs to walk, the legs go out, and then back in the shell. So in this way, a devotee is using the material energy when it's needed for the service of Krishna, but not that we are trying to catch up with the neighbors, you know what I'm saying, everyone has a new car and we still are driving the same old Toyota, my God, you know what is going on. Keeping up with the Joneses is not so recommended. So in this way, right. Of course there's a difference according to ashram. Like my recommendation to the brahmachari is that at least once a week the brahmachari should do a major cleanup in the room and put everything that's in the room outside. And then when it's time to put it back in, ask three times, do I really need this? Do I really need this? Do I really need this? And if you can't answer yes, don't put it back. That's my advice. Because things are collecting. Yeah? Collecting, it just happens. So that's the brahmachari mood, from be very careful, use as little as possible. The grihastha mood is like, well, if you can't, if it's allowed to use it for Krishna, why not? It might come in handy sometime. Right? But that's the opposite mood. So there are different ashrams in Krishna consciousness. And one can choose accordingly. Of course, the more you get into that mood, well, you know, why not? If it's allowed, we'll try it. If we can use it, why not? But some grihasthas are a little more renounced. They're also a little more simple. That's to their advantage. Sometimes the household ashram is described to be a deep well. And some people, when they go for that ashram, they go, 1, 2, 3, head down. Right? But they're usually in the wells, there are also brackets on the inside, like a ladder to climb down. So you don't have to go to the bottom. It's not a must, to, even in the household ashram, to go to the bottom. Why would you go to the bottom? Why would you keep it simple? Live a life of spiritual quality. That will only be to our advantage. Why get unnecessarily entangled? But for service, yes, we have to do. You know, my parents, my father always wanted a big house. So, we grew up in a house where we had three children, and everyone had a room, his own room. Each of the children had his own room, and there was a guest room. So, it seems to be big enough, right? There was a guest. But no, he wanted a bigger house. And then he got a bigger house, and just at the time that when he got the house, within a few months, my sister and myself became independent and moved out into our own place. So then he had this big house with so many rooms, and he treated it like a museum. Anybody who would come get a full tour of the house, you know, take 45 minutes to see the whole house. And here is the Italian marble, and this is an antique table, and this mirror actually came from France and was originally in a palace. And he would go on and on and on about the house. So, and then when we moved out of the house, then didn't know what to do with all the rooms. So he had a study room, he had a dressing room, and even the dog had his own room. Crazy. Anyway, so when I became a devotee, or even not even before, when I left home, I swore I'll never have my own house. Never. I don't want to have anything to do with it, like a big house and decorating and all these things. No, I will not have it. And even at one stage I was married, I told my former wife, I said, we're going to live very, if you marry me, we're going to live very simple. And I tested her. I made her travel with me overland to India, overland, from Europe, a very long journey. And I told her, you can bring whatever you want, but you have to carry it yourself. And she did. She did. Sometimes she tried to put something in my pockets. I said, no, you have to carry it yourself. I was very strict. Anyway, I tested her like that. But, so I never wanted a big house. And then in devotional service, what happened was, I became in charge of the construction of Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi Mandir in Mayapur.
the biggest house, right? And I had to just get involved in building it and decorating it and all these things. And it's like I could see Krishna's got a sense of humor. Yeah. So for Krishna we can do, but for ourselves, keep it simple. That is how we deal with the material energy. The questions are finished, then it's time to go home. We call devotees who have the same spiritual masters, God brothers and sisters. What is the difference to other devotees? Aren't we all God brothers? In the bigger sense, yes, we are all God brothers. One sec, this thing is going down. In the bigger sense, we are, of course, all brothers and sisters and so on. That's fine. And every devotee feels that, you know. But then we call the disciples of the same guru, we call God brothers and God sisters, because there is also something like a family. And each spiritual master is preaching in a particular way. Emphasizing some points a little more than another, and everyone has this personal nature, and all the disciples of that guru are simply surrendered to him and are taking that serious, and Krishna accepts that. So like I gave this morning the example that one guru suddenly initiated one disciple and asked 25 rounds on Ekadasi. All the others were initiated at 16 rounds only. And this one was 16 rounds plus 25 on Ekadasi. So, man says, yeah, but can one spiritual master initiate on different standards than the others? Then what kind of society do you have? There must be one standard for all. No. Not exactly. There is some license for the teacher to make some adjustment in the not in principles, but you know, if he feels no, it will be good to chant a little extra on the codices, then you have to do, and so on. So, therefore, amongst God brothers, there is that special focus to hear from this spiritual master, to please this spiritual master. So, it creates a family. So, but then there's the greater family of all the devotees that is also there. Scribble, scribble, scribble on the wall. I can't read you at all. What is the best way to study Bhagavad Gita? Thematic, overview. Every way is the best way. Every way is the best way. One can study the Gita verse by verse. The best way to study the Gita is by reading the Gita and immediately applying what we have read into our life. That is the best way. In other words, it is all good. Of course, to get an overview of the Gita is nice. You get an idea of what the message of the total book is. But if you take only one sloka of the Gita very seriously, that could be enough. That could be enough to change your whole life. So the essence is about reading the Gita is, what are you doing with it? That is the best way to read the Gita, when we really take it to heart. Okay, we've done that.
Yeah, I'm finished.
Okay, thank you very much. It must be that you want me to go. So, in that case, what can I do? Is it? I should go. Hello. Jump. Bahar jao. Jaldi. Ho gaya. 9 baje chala gaya. Hum log to book hain. Ja. I'm just joking.
No more questions.
What's going on?
What happened? You fell asleep?
Yes. I've also got a question.
Thank you. You had the first and the last.
Sometimes having association with devotees, in some ways they're really inspiring and things are going well, but then sometimes something negative comes in and it's a real big come down.
Then they're really purifying. Because then when the devotees are difficult to tolerate, then they help us to develop to become more tolerant than a tree, more humble than a blade of grass. So when the devotees are mistreating me, good for me.
I don't necessarily mean me, but like they might say something negative about other devotees or something like that.
If they start criticizing other devotees, then just walk away. You see me and you don't. Kind of thing.
Okay,
but also, don't try not to hear criticism of devotees.
Well, sometimes they mightn't be as strong in service, or you're a fanatic, if you're preaching something you've heard in a class and you say that, and they say, they might necessarily be criticizing, but they're sort of, you know what I mean? It's hard sometimes to find someone all the time that's going to be.
No worries, mate. No worries.
I'm just having some experience with this sometimes.
No, me too. Me too. I also get criticized for so many things, but I don't worry about that. Whenever devotees are giving me pleasure, oh, that's very nice. Whenever there are things happening that are not so pleasurable, then I can develop my tolerance. But I will continue to appreciate the devotees. And I'm practicing to get to that stage, that I will only see good in the devotees, that there will be adosha darshi. The only problem is I have to find fault in my disciples. And then, I have to care. That's my duty. It's a bad service to be spiritual master because you've got to find fault in people. But everyone else, they have no faults. Adosha Darshi, one must be one who is Adosha Darshi. You cannot see any faults in anyone. I'm trying to practice. Dulabha is so wonderful. In practice.
Very funny.
Okay, I have to go now, I guess.
Huh? Looks like
no more questions. Okay. Thank you very much then. I'll see you tomorrow for Bhagavatam class. If some of you are very new and don't know the temple so much, then I would like to cordially invite you, especially on the weekends. There's a lot going on, so it's nice to come in the mornings. Come at 7 o'clock is a good time. So have a little dinner now, and then at 7 o'clock you can be back in the temple, and so many amazing things will happen. You won't forget it, and you'll come back for sure. So thank you very much. Nice meeting you all. Hope it was all right.